is Unexpected with Hannah Love. In this podcast, you will gain a new perspective of how God loves you enough to call you to things that you couldn't have imagined for yourself. Hello, everyone. I am thrilled to introduce to you today, John R. Miles. John, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to dive into your story today. Really quick, and before I get anything wrong, I'm going to read off your list of accomplishments because your bio is amazing. So John is a keynote speaker, an author, a combat veteran, and the host of the number one ranked alternative health podcast, which I might add has garnered over 17 million downloads. Holy cow. John, I know that your story is amazing, and I'm just so excited to dive into all the things today. Thank you for being on.
Well, Hannah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, why don't you just start with your story? Start with all the things that led you up to this point, because I know that God was in it and there were a lot of unexpecteds, and now you help a lot of people. So I'm just going to toss it over to you and just share a little bit about your life, your story, and God in it.
Yeah, so I would start with a period when I was really young. We were talking about our kids before we came on. Mine are now grown up. You still have little kids. But when I was five, I was living just outside of Cleveland in Bay Village, Ohio. And I had a normal childhood up until that point. And one day I was playing with my neighborhood friends and we were playing a game of tag and everything was going fine. But as the game got on, we were roughhousing a little bit and pushing each other harder and harder. And I guess I was running away from one of my friends and he pushed me from behind, and the forward momentum of me running and him pushing me launched me in the air. And I ended up crashing through our basement window and experiencing a traumatic brain injury. And from that point forward, my life has never been the same. I developed speech impediments, auditory and sensory processing issues, cognition issues, and other things that made me different from everyone else. And I often laugh when I talk to Jim Quick, who tells people he was the boy with the broken brain, that I can relate to him because that's exactly what happened to me. And wow. So as I was growing up, I had to compensate for these things. And being a introvert to begin with, I suffered a lot from self-identity issues because oftentimes I was afraid to open my mind because I opened my mouth because I would misspeak. I would have these speech impediments. I would say words kind of out of order because sometimes my mind would work faster than I could speak. And I had a hard time dialoguing with people. And so for me, the written word became much more powerful than the spoken word because I struggled with it. And what it really taught me, even from a young age, was the importance of resilience and not letting adversity or your circumstances get the better of you, but for you to have the intentional mindset that you could overcome them and be intentional about how you want to build your life. And that, I think that inner toughness, that inner grit, then carried forward throughout the rest of my life. And as I was growing up, I learned how to compensate for these difficulties. And I learned how to study and ended up getting really good grades. I finished in the top five of my high school and had the opportunity to really go to a number of amazing universities. And I was a recruited cross country and track runner. And I ended up choosing to go to the Naval Academy for a number of reasons. First, to follow in the footsteps of my grandfather and father who served before me, I think was important for me. Second, I had always loved leadership and had always aspired to be the best leader I possibly could and had studied it as far back as I can remember. So I thought, what better institution that you could go to than one of the service academies to learn about leadership? And then I had a deep desire to want to serve and lead. And just be a part of this ongoing legacy that I was part of. So that led me to the Naval Academy. And I had a great time in the service. And I learned so many things about leadership and just the real world, because I think coming out of the Naval Academy, it gives you a great background in what I think the perfect world would look like had you gone into a Navy or Marine Corps where that existed, but that's not the world that we live in. And so I immediately learned to really embrace the guidance of the senior enlisted members who I was responsible for leading, and especially my senior chief in my first duty station was very influential in kind of setting me up on the path to success. And I think I also learned the importance of really getting to know the soldiers who worked for you, not just seeing them in a work context, but what their bigger aspirations were and what they wanted to become. Because I, like me, this was just a starting point for many of them on their path to life.
Right.
And coming out of the service, I got out for one fundamental reason. My last duty station was serving on a joint counter drug task force out of Key West. And I had the fortunate experience to work with everyone from the CIA, DEA, Customs, FBI, etc. And they all approached me to go work for them. And I ended up getting offers from the vast majority of them. But I selected an offer to go to the FBI. And I was about a week away, not even that long, from my Quantico class when my detailer called me out of the blue. I had just gotten out of the Navy and said, unfortunately, Congress for the first time can't seem to pass a budget. Something that we now see play out all the time. But this was during the Clinton administration. I think it was the first time where they had this real huge issue that they couldn't pass a budget. And so my class got recycled. And I expected this to be weeks, maybe a couple months. And I was informed that it would be anywhere from 18 months to 4 years. And by the time the class finally came, I had gone into a civilian career. I had no plan B. And at this point, I was living in San Diego. I had a 2-year-old son and was in the middle of my MBA program, and kind of life had passed by this opportunity. So I'll stop there, because it was really a defining transition for me, because I started this career that never in my life had I expected to go on. I guess I always envisioned myself being an adventurer and kicking down doors and being outside and where the action is. And I'd never envisioned when I was younger sitting behind a desk and being a corporate executive. But I had found myself now as a strategy consultant working for Booz Allen. And that's exactly where my life had ended up at that point.
I love that's why I have this show, to have people on that share. You know, I've never met a person whose life goes the way they expect it, right? But if you look and if you do the work, then you can see God in it, and you can see how the unexpected can be even better than what you could have imagined for yourself. I'm sure that's not what you were feeling at the time, but I'm excited to see what changed for you. I know that you know, you mention in your book Passion Struck, which I can't wait to get to, but you go through a lot of healing, and you go through this journey and then are inspired then to change other people's lives and encourage them to do the same. So why don't you share a little bit about this point on and that change, you know, that thing that just clicked and just changed the trajectory of your life?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think it's important to realize that sometimes reinventions happen on our own, and sometimes they happen to us because of external circumstances. And I mentioned one of the FBI opportunity kind of being taken away from me. Another one happened on my consultant journey. I left Booz Allen, took what I thought was an amazing opportunity with Arthur Andersen, who at that point arguably you could have said was the top of the big four consulting firms like Pricewaterhouse and Deloitte, Ernst & Young. And at first, everything was phenomenal. I got to go to St. Charles, got to learn their Method One, which I still think is one of the best methodologies for implementing large-scale technologies. And I was a practice leader in charge of the cybersecurity practice for the Southwest and the Global Threat and Analysis Center. And I happened to be situated in Houston. Now, I never worked on Enron because we couldn't have the entire office supporting Enron, although about 70% of it was. But all of a sudden, we started to hear some rumblings that we were being investigated and Enron was being investigated, and the partnership, which I was on the path to become a part of, was telling us not to worry about it. It's a bunch of noise, etc. And unfortunately, over the next 3 weeks, things transpired a completely different way. And my millions of dollars of business with 20 clients plus immediately evaporated. And I was left again in a situation where unforeseen events created a situation where I had to, again, reinvent myself. And I had the opportunity at that point to continue and maybe go to KPMG, or they were starting a new company called Protivity. But I just had such a bad taste in my mouth after I felt I had been lied to that I decided I needed some global experience. I wanted to actually go in the corporate world where I wasn't just consulting, but I actually had to implement and live with the strategies I put into practice. So that led me to a firm called Lendlease, which at the time was one of the top 10 firms in Australia, about $12 billion in revenue. And I joined them as their first chief information security officer, because at this point, there weren't that many of people in that role worldwide. And I ended up spending a number of years with Lendlease, had a great experience, traveled all throughout the world. And I had an opportunity coming out of it to join Lowe's Home Improvement. And it was a perfect opportunity for me because Lowe's at that point had just gone through the largest hacking incident in the history of retail up until that point. And so I was recruited in to help fix that and to turn around their operations and how they were running their data centers and their call centers and their operation command centers, et cetera. And I have to tell you, all of that was daunting enough, but I remember the head of HR calls me into her office the first week I'm on the job. And I think it's to get a rundown of my direct reports, et cetera, which it was. But then she shared with me, John, we recently did an employee engagement survey, and out of all the functions in Lowe's, you're talking 1,800 stores, distribution centers, corporate functions, 380,000 employees. I've got one of the two lowest scoring ones in the entire company. And I'm like, you couldn't have told me that as I'm being recruited. So not only am I cleaning up this information security debacle and the operations issues that they were having, I was now faced with the daunting task of trying to figure out what is causing such large disengagement in this group.
Right.
And I'm happy to say I figured it out. About 18 months later, they did the report again, and we went from the bottom two to the top two in the company. So that led me to getting additional responsibilities. I then became the head of application development, became the chief data officer, et cetera. And it was while I was on this path that I had found myself on, where I was constantly trying to achieve more success, more titles, more money, more responsibilities, that I ended up making a shift. I had grown up Roman Catholic. My ex-wife had grown up Pentecostal. So two very different approaches. And she, for the first 10 years we were married, had gone to Catholic service with me. And after a while, I think we were both feeling that it wasn't giving us what we needed, and we needed to explore something different. So we decided that we would shift to something that kind of hit both of us in the middle. So we started going to a Methodist church, and I found that it was really transformational for me in my religious journey, because I always found, and I went to parochial schools my entire childhood up through high school, that the Catholic religion does a very good job of teaching you their doctrine. So Every single week they kind of have a set lesson that they want to teach you. I never felt as much encouraged to read the Bible kind of end to end and to explore it through my own lens. Right. Uh-huh. And the Methodist church was the exact opposite. They really encouraged you to get to know the Bible and to get comfortable and immerse yourself with it. And I found it difficult because, let's face it, some of the topics in the Bible are difficult to understand given that they were written thousands of years ago. And so I signed up for this course called Discipleship, and I was very fortunate that our minister not only had a doctorate in theology, he also had a doctorate in history. And so He was phenomenal at translating these complex ideas and to put them in the context of modern day society. And for people who aren't familiar with discipleship, I think it's a 32 or 36 week course. We met twice a week for a few hours after work. I mean, this was a big undertaking, but I enjoyed it so much that I ended up doing Discipleship 2 and Discipleship 3. But as I was on this journey, I felt like I had gotten the closest in my relationship to God that I had ever felt. And I think when you do that, you end up hearing his voice talking to you more when you're in tune to allow his presence and the Holy Spirit to envelop you. And here I am, this corporate executive who's, I mean, really on this rocket ship trajectory of, I was the youngest vice president at Lowe's, and at this point, I'm looking at an opportunity to become a CIO at a Fortune 50. And all of a sudden, I start hearing this voice that's telling me that I'm on the wrong path and that what I was put on earth to do, my uniqueness was to serve others. Specifically, what I was told was I'm supposed to serve the lonely, battered, hopeless, beaten, bored, broken of the world. And I have to tell you, I had no idea what to do with that, what that even meant, how I was supposed to go about doing it, who those people even were. So I think, like many people we read about, if you're religious in the Old Testament, you get these challenges from God and you typically resist them with all your might because it's so foreign to the life that you're leading. And that's exactly what happened to me. I just couldn't fathom giving up everything that I had built up until this point to take such an arbitrary mission that I had been given. And I think what happened to me is what happens to a lot of people. I think we get so distracted by life and everything that's around us. I call it in the book, living a pinball life, that we end up listening to this bigger voice that tells us to just keep doing what we're doing. And when you hear this quieter voice, the one that's really instructing you on where to take your life, I think sometimes we put it on the back burner. And then what ends up happening is, I think two things happen. One, God ends up talking to you more forcefully over time to pound the message into your head. And I think the other thing that happens is your life starts going from being on a glide path to you facing adversity because you're not adhering to where your life is supposed to go. And that's exactly what happened to me. Work is extremely stressful. I'm working between 80 to 100 hour weeks. I'm traveling 2 weeks out of the month overseas. My relationship is starting to change with my wife and my kids and with others. I'm not finding balance and everything is starting to spiral out of control. And I think through this journey, I am now seeing that this path I am on is extremely detrimental to all aspects of me. But I still didn't listen. I ended up deciding that I was going to get out of this high-pressure job and take one that would give me more work-life balance. So we ended up moving to where we are now in Tampa Bay. But I took this role. It was a global position, billion-dollar company, chief operating officer. And still these events keep happening to me. We have more flooding in the house. And then I end up going through a divorce. And it ends up culminating a few years later with a normal Tuesday. I take my daughter, who at the time I think was probably 9 or 10 years old, to school, and I go to the gym like I did on pretty much every morning. And this day was a little bit different because we had an electrical fire at the gym. And so fire engines come, and I end up going home with the desire to put on my cleats, go out and do a bike ride. So I was running upstairs to switch into biking gear. And I'm about halfway up when I realize Spidey sense kicks in that something is not right. And luckily, I think you revert to your military training at that point. So as I'm coming around the curve, two things happen in sequence. One, I'm now going into a defensive position, trying to examine if there are any threats because I sense something was off. And at the same time, I hear breathing that's heightened and accelerated, and unbeknownst to me, someone had been really examining my whereabouts for a few weeks prior to this and had seen a pattern when I went to the gym that they had about an hour that they could go into the house and burglarize it. And I just so happened this day stumbled right in the middle of that activity as it was ongoing. And unfortunately for me, they had been in the house before, it was later determined, and knew where my valuables were, but also knew where my weapons were. And so as I ran on this corner, not only did I face an intruder in my house, but I faced an intruder pointing a gun at me. And so when you're faced with these situations, just like in combat, you have a split second to react. And it went through my head that I could charge up the remaining flight of stairs, but here I have a person pointing a gun who's actually larger than me at me. Or I could try to evade and get out of there and live to tell the story. And luckily I was able to evade. I went out the back. He ended up going out the front. And I was just in the middle of processing it. And thank God my daughter wasn't there. When 5 days later, my best friend unfortunately committed suicide, and all of a sudden my life-defying situation didn't take the precedence. It was the agony of losing him unexpectedly. And I think we all process trauma differently. I often say each person's trauma is like a snowflake and that no two people experience it the same way. And for me, at first it was okay, but then it really unearthed a lot of trauma that I had experienced earlier on in my life, all the way back to that incident of flying through the basement window. And at this point, I remember getting down on my hands and knees, and it was just like my emotional cup was full. And I remember just praying to God and saying, please take these burdens off of me. And at that point, I started to go see a psychologist. And at the same time, I started to go see a psychologist. And after seeing him for about 4 weeks, he sat me down. And it was really one of the most profound experiences I had had. He wanted me to do a visualization. And so he asked me to picture myself as if I was sitting on a stool in the kitchen. But he said, I want you to think underneath this stool, you've got different supports, but one of them is far outweighing the others. So you're completely out of balance and starting to tip over. And he goes, that's the constant grind that your life has become. And he was right. I was at the point where burnout, emotional numbness, other things were mastering my life, and it was causing my relationships, my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health, my spiritual health to be completely out of whack. And then he said, I want you to think of yourself now on the stool and that you can craft it in the way that you want to make your life be, pursuing it so that you could become a better version of who you are. And I imagined it with these firm supports underneath it, where everything was in balance and I had much better physical health, mental health, as I mentioned, relationship, emotional, spiritual health. And then we kind of sat down at that point and said, what's the starting point? Because I think what a lot of people get wrong is they try to do too much too soon. And so I needed to pick an area that I was going to focus on. And so for me, it became my mental health. And at that point, I decided to go back into redo cognitive processing therapy to really figure out what were the stuck points that were underlying and the barriers that were keeping me stuck where I was. And that began this journey that I'm on today of completely rebuilding my life. And what the book is all about, I started doing me search on myself. So, which the book then kind of builds out in both a memoir and kind of a behavior science psychology book and through interviews that I did with others.
I love that. I was actually listening to one of your episodes on balance, and you were sharing the story of, I think it was a musician, and he kind of went through this, you know, success, achieving more and more, and he was also married, and that related to me and my husband, and we've been really candid with our story, but kind of went through the same thing. What he does is out there on a large platform, you know, lots of eyes, lots of success, lots of awards and accolades. But the other half of it is home and life and, you know, having a new family and balancing that, and spiritual and mental health, physical health, all of it, and the erosion of it, and then kind of the culmination of realizing that something's got to change. So I love that that is something that you, the message that you have taken out there. I think especially for men to hear from other men, I think that's critical. I think it is so courageous of you to do, and I applaud you for that so much. And also getting help, seeking counsel. We've done that before, because sometimes it takes another person to sit down and hear your story, and that can be the hardest part. Sometimes what I do on my podcast is point people back to, you have to go back to the points of pain, and you have to go back to these things that molded you and shaped you, and let God work in those areas and heal you through those areas. You can't just sweep them under the rug, or you'll end up at this place years, decades down the road, with all of this imbalance, with all of these issues, and you don't know why. You have to go back, and that's really painful, but I think that it's critical to the process of healing through. And I love that you have written this book that's got steps. You have a 12-step program, which hopefully you can share a little bit about that. But one of my other favorite things that you talk about is micro decisions and the power of micro decisions. You just making the decision to go and see someone to help, see someone to talk through, see someone to say, all right, let's take a look at what's going on. That's huge. And that was one decision, but that one decision, you know, I often say it, 1 degree is miles down the road. You know, you change that choice, it's 1 degree in your life, but the trajectory of it down the road is just a miles of difference. So I love that you hit on that. What would you say is to someone out there today who is struggling, who may find themselves in that position of just emotional burnout? I know that you're a speaker and you do this all the time. So what is something that you say to your audience when they're faced with, this isn't working? What can I do?
Yeah, I think first it's important to define how large an issue this is, so that if someone's listening to this, whether they're a male or a female, that they understand they're not alone. So if you go all the way back to Henry David Thoreau, in his works on Walden, he talked about back then that the mass of men, so let's apply it to modern day mass of people, lead lives of quiet desperation. And that's exactly how I felt. I felt completely stuck into where I had gotten in life. And I think what ends up happening is over time, the burden of responsibilities keeps you stuck, because now that you've experienced success and experienced wealth and you've got possessions, you're kind of then on this path that you want to accumulate more. And now you feel the family responsibilities that you're living up to. You've got the mortgage, you've got the car payments, you've got everything else. And it just comes this compiling cycle that you don't think that you can break out of. And Gallup has done a lot of research on this. And in 2022, they came out with a report that showed that 900 million people in 142 countries feel unfulfilled in life.
I
think the number is higher than that, because they were looking at working people. I think another thing to point to is a study that Tom Gilovich, who's a psychologist at Cornell, led. And they came out with this research on what are the biggest regrets that people have in life. And what was astonishing to me was 76% of the respondents, and these are people who are in their last third of life journey. It wasn't the mistakes that they had made in life. It was the what ifs, the should haves. It was the regret of not pursuing their ideal self. So I just put those out there because I think it shows how enormous this issue is. So I want to talk about the first thing that I would do, but let me orient the book for someone who's listening to this who has no idea what I'm talking about. I didn't go into this book thinking I was going to write a 12-step book. That was not my goal. What I had done, it's now been about 9 years ago when I went on this journey of self-discovery and self-awareness. I wanted to figure out, how do some people create this ideal life? How do they feel so fulfilled? And I started looking at people like Oprah Winfrey and other famous people who were out there. And I started, as I examined them more and more closely, examined a number of patterns that started to emerge. And over these years, I've now looked at over 750, approaching 800 different people who kind of, I think, are luminaries who have unlocked this secret life that we all aspire to have. And I found 12 recurring things that kept coming up again and again. And I then applied them in my own life to see if this was a bunch of rubbish or if it actually worked. And they end up aligning, quite ironically, with 6 mindset shifts and 6 behavior shifts. So those are the 2 first sections of the book. And then the third section really goes into the power of deliberate action and intrinsic motivation at then allowing you to implement those mindset and behavior shifts in your life. So the first one that I talk about is something that I call the mission angler. And for anyone who's listening who loves to fish, I live here in Tampa Bay, a great area for fishing. And anyone who likes to fish knows that you don't just decide haphazardly that you're going to go in the boat. You point it in some direction in the Gulf, put your line in, and think you're going to catch fish. You might be lucky on that day and do it, but the people who I know who are really good anglers do this very methodically. They wake up very early in the morning, typically. They look at the moon phases. They look at the tides. They get reports on what fish not only are in season, but where people have had luck catching them. They have fish finders. I mean, there's a whole process to it. But how many of us are that diligent in how we're also setting up our own lives, the life that we want to live? I think it's probably less than 10% of us really put that much structure into how we approach our own lives. And that's what this chapter is really about. It's about the behavior science concept of future self and how do you life craft your future self into becoming your ideal self. And so I explore self-discrepancy theory, which is really looking at the three versions of self, our actual self, which is who we are at this moment in time, our ought self, O-U-G-H-T, which is who we think we should become. It's kind of what we learn from our parents and society and other examples. And then our ideal self, which is who we could become. And I think most of us fall in the trap of becoming our ought self. That's certainly where I found myself. And so this is really about how do you bridge that gap to becoming your ideal self in the future and the steps that you can take to become it. And I think where this really begins is you need to redefine what success looks like.
Right.
And I think we have been conditioned to believe it's all the things that I aspired to be. It's having the house, having the money, having the car, having this life that looks phenomenal on the surface, but leaves you empty inside. And in my work studying blue zones, and I think Robert Waldinger put out a great book on the good life last year. He currently leads the Harvard Adult Study of Adult Aging, which if a listener isn't familiar with this, this has been going on for now over 8 decades. And it started with Harvard researching a group of men who you could consider to be elite Harvard attendees at that time. John F. Kennedy was actually one of the participants. And on the other side was a group of men from the opposite side of the tracks. And what they found over now looking at not only those men's lives, but their descendants, is that none of the things that I just talked about, which we typically think define success, brought them fulfillment or contentment. Instead, it was first and foremost relationships, health, passion, having passion and purpose, that and serving others that really made them feel fulfilled inside. It didn't matter if they were the most desolate person or the richest person. It was those things that brought them fulfillment. And ironically, it's the same things that people find in the blue zones throughout the world where people live longer, happier lives. And so I really try to unpack that in the book as the starting point that you've got to take. And to what you mentioned earlier, a constant theme throughout the book is the power of intentional micro choices throughout the moments that make up our lives. Because I think it's important for people to realize I didn't get into the state that I was in overnight. It's not as if I just woke up and all of a sudden I'm numb and burned out and in this stuckness state. It had grown over a period of time through a bunch of choices that I had made that led me there. So you can't go into this thinking that overnight you're going to magically change all that and be a different person tomorrow. It takes just as much effort, if not more, to break free from that. So, and it all starts with taking simple boundary magnifying choices that challenge us and who we are.
Would you say that that message, the thing that God spoke to you about what he wanted you to do all these years ago, now that you're doing that, would you say that following the quiet voice, following the quiet thing that God leads you to, that you're running from in pursuit of world success, would you say that that is the thing that each of us will find our fulfillment in? Is the one thing, the small thing, the quiet voice that God calls us to? Because I feel like from what you've told me, this is what you do now. You help the broken. You help those who are burnt out. You do the exact thing that God told you all these years ago. And you thought, this doesn't make sense. This isn't going to achieve what the world is wanting from me, what my family is wanting from me, what, you know, what the status quo is. Would you say that that is the place of success for each of us? To find the thing that God is speaking to each of us, and then to pursue that but also while balancing the health of mental health and spiritual health and physical health, all those things. You can't help other people and you can't serve other people well until you have made those own internal repairs.
Yeah. So I'm going to answer this by telling you a story. So I have a friend, okay. Andreas Widmer.
Love story.
I have a friend named Andreas Widmer. He's now the head of the Catholic University School of Business, and he teaches entrepreneurship. Great guy. If you ever meet him, he's like 6'9", huge guy. But when he was younger in his life, 18, 19 years old, he was like a piece of driftwood. He was, as Abraham Lincoln self-described himself for like the majority of his life, a driftwood just aimlessly going through life, kind of like that pinball that I talked about. Mm-hmm. And his parents saw the struggle in him that he didn't know what his life was going to amount to. So he's from Switzerland, and they encouraged him to apply to the Swiss Guard. He ends up unbelievably getting selected, never thought in a million years he would, and shortly thereafter finds himself as one of the lead guards for Pope John Paul II. And he tells me that Pope John Paul II was just an amazing human being. And one of the things that was remarkable about him, and it reminds me of the Dalai Lama too, is that when you're in their presence, it's as if the rest of the world melts away and it's only you and them. And Andreas said everyone would talk about the Pope that way. But he was also very perceptive, and he realized that Andreas was struggling. And so he started to mentor him. And the key thing that he would mentor Andreas on is that God created you in your uniqueness to serve others by finding a problem that is inherently solvable only through your unique talents, and that it is your journey in life to listen to him speak to you and tell you and guide you on that journey to finding what that uniqueness is and having the courage to pursue it to help others. And so I believe that's exactly what ended up happening to me. And for those who were given a task like I was, I sat there for really well over two and a half years trying to get to the bottom of, like, what am I really being asked to do? And I think unless you start taking the steps for self-care and self-awareness, and I got into a really profound mindfulness practice as I was going through my mental health journey, and just starting to spend time with myself and journaling and letting myself explore my authenticity, because I had found myself as if I was living in like a permanent masquerade where I was putting on a mask every day, hiding who I really was. And the more I really explored who I was, and I realized that I was the greatest person on earth I was ever going to meet. And the same goes for each of you who are listening to this. The person you look in the mirror at every morning is the greatest person you're ever going to meet on this planet. And have the confidence that I'm made to do something here that's important. I started to really look at, like, what is causing so many people to feel all those things that God told me? Because I think those were symptoms of an underlying issue that he was calling me to solve. And I finally came to the conclusion about 5 years ago that what that is that so many people wake up in the morning and they feel like they have no significance, like nothing that they do matters. It's a state of unmattering. And when we don't feel like we matter to ourselves, to others, to the world, your life starts becoming hopeless. You start feeling lonely. You start feeling battered, broken, and stuck, and you don't know what to do. So that's been my journey, is how do you break free from unmattering to discover a life of flourishing and feeling significant and believing that you were put on earth to do something meaningful with your life. So that was kind of the transformation. Long-winded answer, but I think that story helps.
I love it. I love that story. And I love too that, you know, your story is a perfect example of how oftentimes we are most effective at our calling, at the thing that we do, because we've had to experience that. So, you know, a lot of times you'll hear the battle that you're facing, like that's the thing that you're going to minister to later in life. So you went through all of these things so that you can now effectively go out and minister to people who have felt the same way, who are dealing with the same issues. It's relatable, but it's also they have a higher level of respect because you've lived it. You know, you've lived it, and now you are a shining and unique example of how you can change. It's so good.
Yeah. And I don't, this quote comes from a friend of mine, Rory Vaden. So I don't want to steal his thunder, but he says, we're best positioned to serve the person that we once were. And I think that's exactly what you just referred to.
That is perfect. I love it so much. Well, John, is there anything else that you would like to share today? I've just been so thankful for the vulnerability and the honesty that you have had, and also that you've written this book. I know it came out February 6th, I believe. It's going to touch so many lives. It's going to change so many lives. And the thing about it is you've faced adversity. You've faced difficulty. You've experienced the highs and the successes, and through it all, you've come back and found that the real success is following the thing that God has uniquely equipped you and you alone to do in this world and for others.
Well, thank you for that. And I guess I will leave people with this. I recently heard someone talking about the need to have courage before you take action, and I ended up just writing a podcast episode that'll go out here in a couple weeks, a solo one for me. But I think that person has it completely inversed. To me, action drives confidence. Action creates the courage to take more boundary expanding action, which then creates more confidence, which then makes you take more. And I think that that's something that people get wrong. I think it's the same thing when it comes to discovering your passion. Oftentimes we sit here thinking that the passion is going to come to us, our purpose, and that's not the case. It's by taking action that you start changing who you are, and it opens you up to seeing new perspectives, and it's through these new lenses that you end up discovering your passion, because you're on this journey of taking courage expanding steps that move you from where you are to a future destination. And so that would be what I would encourage people who are listening today to do, is don't fear taking action. Action, even the smallest form, like it could be you're afraid to speak, and so you sign up for an improv class. Just taking that action and making that decision, I guarantee you, is going to have a profound effect in so many areas of your life that you don't even expect it to have. So it's things like that that can change your life.
That's right. Action is the forward momentum, and it takes a little momentum, you know, to pick up speed in the direction of forward and future and all the things that we've covered. John, thank you so much. I just thank you for all that you've done. Where can we find you? Let everyone know where they can find you. I love your podcast. In a way, it reminds me a little of mine. I write, I'm like you, I'm more introverted, and I actually feel better. I write out every episode that I do that's just myself, because I feel like I can communicate better when I've written it first and can read it and see it. So I love that, love that tie-in, and I love your podcast episodes. I think you're touching lives. I know you're touching lives. I so appreciate you. We'll link your book at the bottom of this episode. And I know that we can find you on Instagram. I'll let you share. You share where we can find you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to share where people can find me. The easiest place is John R. Miles. I have a distant relative who happens to have been a British rock star. So it's very difficult to eclipse him on SEO. So that's why I use my middle initial. And if not there, passionstruck.com. And from there, you can find everything else about me and the company and what we're doing. And on all the socials, either John R. Miles or Passion Struck Podcast.
Okay. I thank you so much. This has been such an awesome conversation, and it's going to touch lives. I love it. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such an honor.
Thank you so much for listening today. If this episode has encouraged you, please feel free to share the show with your family and friends. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world today, and my hope is that this show is a candle in the dark.